America's first ever youth symphony came out of Oregon's High Desert, a tiny little town in Oregon's High Desert. You know, every youth orchestra in the U.S. today can trace its ancestry back to the tiny, dusty town of Burns in eastern Oregon, and to one gifted visionary violin teacher named Mary Dodge, founder of the Sagebrush Symphony, and by extension, of the Portland Youth Philharmonic. You'll sometimes hear people say that the Portland Youth Philharmonic was founded by somebody else, a Russian man, actually. That, as far as I can tell, is more or less a legacy of the sexism that was rampant in the country at the time. Mary Dodge started it. And she really ought to be recognized for it. So let me tell you all about it. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself. My name's Finn J.D. John, and I do a newspaper column every week called Offbeat Oregon History. This column got started in 2008 and runs in about a dozen community newspapers around the state. It tells the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghaied sailors and Skid Row bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. Now this RSS feed brings you one of our archived columns every morning, in your choice of text and pictures, or audio-only formats. Today's episode was published in the newspapers on August 21st, 2011, and I'm going to read it to you now. Oregon is the home of America's oldest youth orchestra, the Portland Youth Philharmonic, founded, they claim, in 1924. But what many people don't know is that the Youth Philharmonic isn't really from Portland, and didn't really start in 1924. It actually started in 1912, in the town of Burns, a place so far away from the obvious trappings of culture as to almost qualify as a howling wilderness. Before I jump into this story, I have to fill you in on some background details, and forgive me if you already know them. The important thing to know is that Portland and Burns were as different from each other in 1910 as they are today, but in very different ways. Portland was a rough-hewn, up-and-coming metropolis, still commonly called Stumptown, with the roughest and most dangerous waterfront on the West Coast, a tremendous amount of trade going on, and a better class of well-mannered citizens who wore nice clothes and appreciated culture. From far away, you might have thought it was a logical place for a youth orchestra to rise. But appearances deceive. Although no longer a colony per se, Portland was like a colonial city. The elements of culture were assumed to come from somewhere else, New York, London, Paris, and possession of or appreciation for those elements was a mark of status. Burns, though. Burns was in the middle of a homesteading boom. A new law had opened up 320-acre patches of the high desert to settlers who would like to come and claim a piece and prove it up by living on it for 5 years. So Burns was full of people who actually came from those revered culture places, who flocked to the wilderness to create a community for themselves. And they sure weren't going to create a community in which the best things culture had to offer were reserved only for the swells. Like other emigrants before them, they were out to create a utopia of sorts, and they sure didn't want their children growing up with no culture. Put simply, Burns was hungry for culture and felt a need for it. Portland was, for the most part, happy with the culture it had. That's why it makes perfect sense that the Portland Youth Philharmonic got started in Burns, Oregon, a town in the desert with a three-digit population, a day's bone-jarring wagon trail ride from the nearest railroad terminal. The spark that brought those homesteaders' hunger for culture together into the nation's first youth symphony was a woman named Mary Dodge. Dodge was, by anyone's standard, an extraordinary woman. She was a classically trained violinist, an extremely good one. But what was unusual about her was that her talent was linked with a love of children and, more importantly, a deeply democratic view about making music. The idea that a countywide population of a couple thousand wouldn't have a big enough critical mass of musical geniuses to form a symphony would have made her laugh. Music, she felt, was a gift to humanity, and anyone could and should get good enough at it to bask in it and in the happiness that it brought. In other words, for all her talents as a musician, her skills in philosophy as a teacher were what made her really extraordinary. Mary Dodge came to Burns when her husband, bass player Mott Dodge, got a job in Harney County. They arrived in their new hometown in 1910. When they got there, Mary Dodge naturally started playing her violin. The town's children found this fascinating, and pretty soon Dodge had a flock of them learning to play in an old photography school which she'd taken over. She was joined by her husband, who was able to teach kids to read notes on the bass clef, and by a homesteader who happened to be a professional flautist from Italy, who taught the wind instruments and conducted. By 1912, they had put together an orchestra, which they called the Sagebrush Symphony Orchestra, consisting of 30 to 35 disciplined, skilled musicians, many of them still under 4 feet tall. By 1915, the Sagebrush Symphony was the pride of Harney County, and they were touring eastern Oregon on a Chautauqua circuit. The town of Burns was thoroughly energized, and residents raised funds to send them to the state fair in 1916. Burns still had nothing but wagon trails connecting it with the outside world, so the trip to Salem was a real adventure for the kids. One player counted 14 flat tires on the way from Burns to Bend. The car arrived on its rims, but they got there. The kids played 7 concerts at the state fair and then headed north to Portland for a week as the toast of the city. The Portland JCs got cars to use to take the young musicians on tours of the area, showing them the newly built Columbia River Highway and Council Crest and other area attractions. And, of course, there were several performances. Portland was utterly enchanted. The kids couldn't know it, but it was their finest hour. It wouldn't happen again. The U.S. was already in the process of getting directly involved in World War I, which shifted everyone's attention off the symphony and onto grimmer events. Then, in 1918, Mott Dodge was transferred to Portland, and he and Mary left Burns. Mary had taught her students well. The Sagebrush Symphony Orchestra soldiered on without her for a while, although it never reached the same levels of acclaim. But some of her students moved with her to Portland, where she opened her own violin school, and with their help built another youth symphony, the Portland Junior Symphony Orchestra. Successful though the orchestra was, there was one more thing that Dodge had to do before her creation would be ready for the true international success that was to come. Find a conductor. So when a professionally trained Russian conductor named Jacques Gershkovich came to Portland to guest conduct the Portland Symphony, she talked him into taking over as junior symphony conductor. At first he protested that he didn't teach children, but she persuaded to come and listen to them play. And after hearing them, he said, in his thick Russian accent, "I take!" And he remained with them until 1953. Gershkovich came in 1923 and conducted the first performance in 1924, and it's that date that people use to mark the origin of the symphony, as if it didn't exist until a real conductor showed up to take over. And by real conductor, I mean a male conductor. Certainly this marks the moment that the symphony moved up into the big leagues, but using 1924 as its date of origin is a bit of a slap in the face for the people who did the really hard work and beat very long odds to get it to that point, and I'm talking about Mary Dodge. But it was Gershkovich who'd catapulted the symphony to international fame. That much is definitely true. Under his baton and that of his successors, the group has performed all over the world, and in the early 1930s it was regularly broadcast on nationwide network radio. It's been the model for dozens, perhaps hundreds, of youth symphonies in cities all over the U.S. Its name was changed to the Portland Youth Philharmonic in 1978. And it all came out of a tiny, dusty town in the wilderness of eastern Oregon, with the help of a woman who is probably the best music teacher in Oregon history. That's it for today. You can check out all the columns and subscribe to either RSS feed by going to www.offbeatoregon.com. Both Offbeat Oregon Azure feeds are optimized for smartphone use, but they work great on a netbook or tablet, or even a good old-fashioned computer. Everything here is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Thanks for listening. Drop me a line anytime at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @OffbeatOregon, especially if you're going to be in the Corvallis area and have time for a cup of coffee. I'll be back tomorrow around 6 a.m. with the next episode, and until then, well, happy trails!